Okay, here we go. It is May 25th, 2017. Special thanks to our WCHE 1520 AM family. This is Concerned Citizens Melodic Caucus sponsored talk show, Don't Get It Twisted. We are the talk show addressing the issues, needs, and concerns of Melonics, and we are the informative and interactive roundtable, and we spur engagement of the everyday people, and we talk about the affairs and the events impacting their daily lives. And you know what? I am your lead host, Everett T.J. Butcher, and with me today, of always, and has been by my side, and I continues to be on my side, none other than our Melonic inspiration guru, Dr. Ayo.
Hotep, peace and blessings, everyone.
And you know what? Chef Adrian, she's on the airways and over the air is doing the thing over on the other side of the country, on the coast. So our hats out to her and safe journey back as she comes back and all.
Safe travel.
You know, she's doing her thing and all. And our Westchester connection will be coming through and all. But you know what? Also, today, we're going to have something special because a few months back, we went over with the Family Ties, the Legacy, FTLResearch.com, and that's when we were doing our research and bringing family together, reunion and bonding and finding the essence of what it is. And we talk about esteem, self-esteem, and with everything that's going on, we have to look up to things. And if we have that foundation, we need that foundation to be able to move forward. So these are the kind of things that that we can lead to, along with the other things that have happened, you know, to scale that down, you know, over the last couple of days, the bombing that went off there in England and you know.
Yeah, and I definitely want to caution people from blaming all Muslims. It's the same thing we could do and blame all Caucasians or white people for not only the things, the terroristic acts that happened since slavery, but before as well. So we have to understand that people of the Muslim faith, for the most part, do not condone these kinds of violent acts. And so we cannot afford to blame all Muslims, no more than we can afford to blame all Christians for what has happened in the past or what is currently happening to Melonic people worldwide.
You know, ditto. I come to this conclusion in this one, that anything and everything that happens, it's not just us and them. It's all of us, because it's inclusive. Because when we talk about Melonics, we talk about humanism. We talk about humanity as a whole, and we come from a divested foundation, from our beginning, from our roots, from where we first began as human beings, and as societies grow. And this is where it's going to take that respect. It's going to take that acknowledgement, and that's where these differences come in. So all these times when we talk about that, but we're going to have a special guest on today. And as I was saying, with the FTL research, actually here in Chester County, right in Westchester, we have the plenary going on for what we call the Family Ties, the Legacy. It's the reunion, the research reunion and fellowship outing network. And what this is, we bring families and just people at large together. Instead of just having like a family reunion, they do research of the family, and then they find the ties and they find the lineage, what it's all about. And this builds a foundation, because this builds the esteem. And then it's also as they reach and find out, you find out how you're connected around the whole society around you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we talk about brotherhood, you know,
right,
all is one. And so when these tragedies do happen,
mm-hmm,
this is something that happens to all of us.
That's right.
And the good things that happen, well, that needs to be shared with us as well. So when we're coming from the Melonic aspect from there and all, as you say, Dr. Ayo, the contributions that we're getting, it's not like we're trying to bridge and build contributions. We have been giving giving contributions throughout, ever since man has existed.
The beginning of time.
Yes. And so with that, I hear we have others have come on now. We have a Westchester connection coming on. Is that Dr. Bay?
No, John King.
John. Oh, my goodness. Let's
good
talk.
We're here. Good afternoon, everyone.
Oh, and there's Dr. Bay also. So, you know
good
what?
Good afternoon.
This is perfect timing because coming in, when we're talking about that, we're talking about foundations and coming in here, we have a special guest that has come on, and this is one of them, you know, I don't know how to begin with some of the works that she's done. And continues to do. I'm going to let her even tell us about some of them to bring out, because if I'll mess it up one there. But none other than that, this is one of the foremost genealogists that I've come across, that I've ever come across. And you know what? And I'm happy to say that going through my DNA, you know, we found a bridge there. But none other than Angela Walton Raji, and she is on the line now. Angela, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. Welcome to Don't Get It
Welcome.
Twisted.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Could you give us a quick background on yourself? Tell us about...
Sure. Well, I'm from a little bit further west than all of you. I come from western Arkansas and eastern Oklahoma, and so that's cowboy country. We do everything from the rodeos and all of that, and I grew up in a little frontier town, Fort Smith, Arkansas, and some of you probably don't think you've ever heard of it, but I bet you've heard of our most famous resident, Judge Parker, the hanging judge, and but that's my hometown, second largest city, believe it or not, in the state, and we have an interesting history there, and I was a child who, you know, loved history and sort of listened to the elders speak, and when opportunity came to start researching the family, I did, and started researching particularly my family from eastern Oklahoma, and before 1907, it was the Choctaw Nation in Indian Territory, and I have researched my family on my paternal side. My maternal side is Tennessee, Mississippi, with a little smattering of Virginia and a smattering of North Carolina thrown in. But I've been researching over 25 years and continue to research. I blog about this. I teach classes in genealogy and family history because every family has a story. And it's not just getting a list of names, because no one wants to listen to a list of names, but you do want to know what happened. What is the narrative that allowed your family to survive? And that's part of what I do. I teach people how to pull the story out of the records without having a need to embellish. And it's something that I do just about every day. I do write, I blog, and I also have a biweekly podcast on African-American genealogy. So I stay busy. It keeps me out of trouble.
So if someone wanted to read your blog or keep up with you, how would they do that?
Well, there are several places where you might find me. I have a biweekly podcast, AfricanRootsPodcast.com. I also have an African Native American genealogy blog that is ongoing. I update that all the time. I also have a personal blog where I just talk about my own adventures as a family historian, and it's called My Ancestor's Name, GodBlogspot.com. And so I dabble in a number of things, and sometimes the records call to you. You may not wake up thinking you're going to research that, but you stumble upon something and your curiosity is piqued. But you can find me in all those. You can also find me on Facebook. I am one of the administrators for Afrogenius Community Group. We help people get started, or we help people with roadblocks. Maybe someone's been doing something, but they can't find anything else, and they don't know what to do next. We give you assistance with that, too. So you can find me on Facebook, also on Twitter, at A.Y. Walton, and so you can find me pretty much in a lot of the platforms online.
Yeah, I would also like to add, if you go to ftlresearch.com and look under the facilitators, then you'll see under Family Historians, and when you go down there, it'll be a scroll down, and it'll take you right down, right to the Angela Walton Raji, and then this would bring you to all those links that she was talking about, the Association of Professional Genealogists, the Oklahoma Historical Society she has there, the Choctaw and Chickasaw Choctaw Freedom Project. I hope she talked about that a little bit. The Oklahoma Genealogy Society. The list goes on, and these I've listened to some of her webinars that she's done. Dynamic. One of the things that we talked earlier, and I know I got the crew with the Westchester crew. I know you just want to chime in, want to go with this too. But your perspective, when you talk about the perspective when we're finding about our family and the history over there, you have a perspective that you talk about, that how you look at the history from that perspective, in when people are trying to find their lineage and move them from there. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think that a lot of people think that we don't have a story, we don't have a legacy, but nothing could be farther from the truth. All families have stories, all families have a narrative, and my interest is to continually assist people into finding that narrative. When you first find that census record, what are you looking at? Many people I know have said to me, well, you're not going to find anything. They didn't keep records on us. And so they will refuse to look. And unfortunately to me, well, then you're putting yourself now in that box. You've chained your own self. You've put the slave shackles back on, as opposed to saying, hey, let me look and see what's there. Let me empower myself and let me claim what I'm seeing of these individuals who survived, because it's from finding those survivors who made it to being freed from bondage, from being freed from having been enslaved, and you see how many families were intact and you realize, wait a minute, We did get through that, and it's absolutely amazing, and it's quite empowering. I have seen the effect firsthand on people who I would have thought. In fact, I think of an event in 1996, to go back that far. I was at a family reunion in Arizona, and one of the cousins said, oh, please, you've got to talk at the family reunion, you've got to do this. And I was kind of reluctant, but no, you've got to talk about Uncle Cephas and tell his story. And Uncle Cephas was a man who was once enslaved, who joined the Civil War with his brother and his two sons. So these four ancestors enlisted together in the Union Army. And so I told the story of that, how they were captured and how they escaped capture. And this is in the official record. What surprised me, because my first reaction was that, oh gosh, but there are a lot of kids at the reunion. Kids don't want to hear that story. I'm expecting them to be kind of boisterous and paying little attention. And I was very surprised as I began to share that story. I shared documents as I was talking, as I was saying, here's the record that shows that he returned after having been captured. And people could look at that. And what surprised me, two boys sitting in the audience, and one was kind of squirming, and the other little boy, touches them, shh, be quiet. And I'm like, that's interesting to watch. And as I began to talk about this man who was a marksman, who was a freedom fighter, and I saw this child's body start to sit erect, he became so engaged with what he was saying on the screen.
Great. You know what?
I saw empowerment.
Great. And you know what? I'm so sorry. We're getting on break time, because so as soon as we come back, we're going to come back with a special guest, none other than Angela Walton Raji. And Westchester will be coming in, because there's two areas that she deals with. And I know Westchester want to bring this up. So listen, 610-701-WCHE-9243. That's Don't Get It Twisted. You can call on in. We'll be right back. Don't Get It Twisted.
At WSFS Bank, we stand for what's possible. Like small businesses with big plans and big families that need a little more space. Whatever you need, you'll find us right around the corner and always in yours. Stop by any location today or visit us online at WSFSBank.com. We're WSFS Bank, and we stand for what matters. We stand for service. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
The early bird doesn't get the worm. The early bird keeps cool all summer with a Morvent Early Bird AC Precision Tune-Up. Why wait till there's a problem? Be early bird cool. Get more value, more trust, more vent.
Clunkety clunk, squeal. Sound like trouble from my air conditioner. I called Morvent. Jim came, took the whole system apart, replaced the parts. Now all I hear is whoosh, because I got more value, more trust, more vent.
I don't need this.
I thought, looking at my clogged kitchen drain and house full of company. I called Morvent. Jeff Kane explained the problem simply so I could make a good decision. Now the drain's clear because I chose more value, more trust, Morvent.
Yikey Wawa! Running out of hot water is one way your water heater cries out for help. Call Morvent. Get a water heater rejuvenation. Your water heater gets added life, you get more hot water, and more value, more trust, Morvent.
This is the Talk of Chester County, 1520 WCHE.
Again, Bob Marley.
Yeah, man.
One love. Coming together. And this is the theme. That's something our guest was talking about, that with the young people coming in there. And this is what's needed today. Because when things come across like they're coming in there, this is nothing new. Tragedies and things are coming in there. But we have to take this in perspective. And we can't lose hope within it. And division is not going to get it. And the one thing that will stop you from division, if you have a sense of belonging, a sense of esteem within yourself and knowing, and then you can respect others. And as you see their esteem, it comes together.
Knowing who you are and being connected.
Yes. Hey, Westchester Connection. Yes, what? You know, Angela, there's a couple of areas there, especially with the Native American and also with Civil War and some of the projects going there. So this chimes right in line, I guess, with right there, Westchester. So Westchester, Dr. Bay and John. Hey, the mic's on you, and also we have Angela here, so chime on in.
Well, I certainly want to thank her for all the work she's doing, because it's so important, not just for families, but the problem that we have in our world is we're inaccurate, and John likes to talk about the buried history, and it's not buried by accident. It is buried for a purpose, because empire cannot continue when people have information. Empire can't stand, and when you're living in a fog, which many of us are, and I say us, meaning all people, you're living in a world that doesn't exist, and therefore you can do things that are connected to nothing. So you can be outrageous and inhumane because you don't have any attachment to being human. What it means to be fully human, you know, your spiritual center. And it's all connected, and I thank her so much for this, because we need to know this, especially when we talk about First Nations and Africans, and we have some information on that, but almost virtually none. And until this group can get together, as we had been for hundreds of years before Europeans ever arrived here, I don't see the world being able to come to grips with anything.
Mm. Well, and the other thing is history should be matters of fact. But the way history is told, and personal histories are not necessarily matters of fact. They are matters of fact that are skewed by perspective. Now, I have no problem with history being told from a perspective, as long as we understand that whose perspective it is. And I think that is part of the problem, because as Dr. Bay was saying, you know, there's plenty of history that is covered up and that is specifically and purposefully avoided. And that is because history, when only offered through a perspective, is used for propaganda. Mm-hmm. Propaganda or telling the story of the storyteller, mm-hmm. not necessarily telling the story that is truth. And I think that's the problem problem that exists. There is so much of the United of America's history that is misspoken, that is just purposefully told inaccurately, so they can propagandize the very things they do still today. And you know, one of the examples that, I gave on my show today was is the nuclear weapons narrative. I mean, the United States wants to play the moral authority on nuclear weapon propagation, and yet they are the only country that has used a nuclear weapon. They're the only country that is that killed civilians with two atomic bombs on major cities on a small, tiny island nation. And yet they secure themselves in the world as if they should be or are entitled to be the moral authority over on the use of nuclear weapons. This is the kind of narrative that never gets told properly, and then as a result of that, we can't understand why there would be resentment over the United States having nuclear or having military bases over 70% of the globe. And until we face some of this stuff, and you know, and that's not even talking about you know, people of color. That's just talking about, well, it is, because the Asian people who were killed. But that's not even our conversation in this roundtable. But that gives an example without making it personal to, you know, to us here, or as personal, because it's not, it wasn't our loss in those, in those, you know, horrific events of 1945.
Well, one point that you bring up when you talk about moral standard, until we have a foundation and we know ourselves and we build our own morals and we have our own foundation, that starts at home, or the nucleus with our family in that sense. And if we don't know about our family, we don't know our history, how can we have morals in that sense? And how can you fight those things that do come up that way? And then you have the have and the have-nots. And it's just that small amount that governs over the many. And I think this is where we're saying with family ties and legacy in that sense. Once you know the legacy of who you are, what you are, where you come from, and how we interact together, then we can put those things in check. But until we do that, that's what it takes. And this is why I believe that historians and genealogists are so important, that when they search and research, just like Angela does, but not only do they research, but then when they, like you said, when you find a story, but you find the factual story. Because, you know, a tale is one thing. Just what the African proverb says, until the story is told, or the story is told
by the lion, the hunter
tale,
will always win.
The tale will always glorify the hunter. So this is what it is. Well, you know what? That was my little thrown in it. Well, let's get back to our guest here, Angela. Would you like a response back to to our Westchester connection? And I'm going to open it up here, please.
Well, sure. If there's, I guess, a particular question, certainly I'd be willing to answer that. But, of course, as I always tell people in any class that I teach, you want to go beyond just fact. You can just read a list of names of people on the census. That's a fact that they were there and that they were enumerated. But there's no lesson from a list of names. The lesson is from the story that you're able to pull out of that, and to look at all of those different categories that help you construct it. Where was it taken? When? What was going on? What's your timeline? What time frame did those individuals live, and how did they come through that? And but I'm certainly happy to answer any questions that the group may have as well.
Yeah. Roundtable, any questions?
I would like to know what suggestions you could provide our listening audience in researching the more challenging paths for our history when we perhaps don't know where to go to get the information. Where would mm-hmm. be the sources, and what are some of the strategies?
Sure. Well, actually, one has the best resource. You start with yourself. Always start with yourself if you've never done it before. Sit down, get a piece of paper, and write down what you know. Write a small 3 or 4 sentence outline if that's all you know, but then write down the people that you know from whom you descend. You may hit a blank spot very quickly. Name your father, name your mother, put them on a separate line. For your father, now name his father, name his mother. For your mother, name her father, name her mother. If you've already hit blank spots, that first place you hit a blank, that's where your research is going to begin. and it might be, I'd like to know the name of my mother's father. Then that's where you're going to go. I'm going to find out who is my maternal grandfather. So you want to look and see, well, what resources do I have? Is there a relative who has the family oral history? Is there someone in the family who goes to everybody's funeral? And because every family has somebody who does it. Everybody's funeral. And but that person comes back from that funeral with a little funeral program, and I'll guarantee they have a stack of them in their nightstand, funeral programs they've been attending for the last 40 years. That stash of funeral programs is full of history, and you can find some initial answers to your questions right with that collection. So you start looking with start with yourself, look at your immediate artifacts. And then, I know the temptation is real. You're going to go online. I know you see the same commercials I see. Ancestry, oh, I just found out my great-great-granddaddy was a slave and he died as a businessman. I've seen the ads, too. Well, I know you're going to be tempted to do that. Well, there are places. Ancestry is a prescription site, is a subscription site you have to pay. But there are sites that you can get the same information for free, heritagequest.com. If you have a library card, public library card, you can access the same census records for free with your library card. If you have a computer, FamilySearch.org. You can see the exact same census records on FamilySearch.org. It's free. It's sponsored by the LDS Church. They open it up to the world, and you can use it. And fabulous resource right there. You will start with the 1940 census because the census records are closed for 72 years. So we don't get to see the 1950 census until for another 5 years. 2022 is when they're going to open that up. So you're going to start. Identify someone who is in 1940. You're going to ask questions of the elders. Well, where were they living? Where was Grandma Ellen living in 1940? Was she in Maryland, in Baltimore, or was she from North Carolina? Because that's where you're going to, you've got to know where to look. But the census records are, I know, going to be the engine that is going to propel your research. That's what's going to carry you back into the 1800s. When you get to 1900, keeping in mind that the census is offered every 10 years. So you're going to start with 1940, 1930, 1920, 1910. 1900 is important for a major reason. You're going to find a lot of people in 1940 who are older than 40 years old. And when you're dealing with a person over 40 years of age in the 1900 census, you are possibly looking at the name of a person who was once enslaved. And being able to see that family, see elders, and in the 1900 census, critical pieces of information. What month and year were you born? They collected that information in 1900. In the same census year, they asked women, how many live births have you had? How many of those children are still living? That gives you an idea if your great-great-grandmother had given birth to 8 children and 6 of them are still alive as of that day the census was taken, then you know, oh my gosh, there's some names now I can go after, and I know there are 2 who are not in the house. I need to find out who those other children might be. So you have a lot of clues, a lot of things to get busy. It's a lot of fun, highly addictive, but it's addictive for a very good reason. It's directing you to your past. And it's a calling, and if you listen to it and follow the calling, you'll find yourself on a tremendous journey.
Well, we're getting ready to go on break here again, and you know, so there's a couple of things that brought up here, and we're going to come back with the crew. This is WCHE 1520. This is Don't Get It Twisted, 610-701-WCHE. That's 9243. Been calling with some questions on there, and when we're going to come back, we'll be back to the round table and the crew with more. Don't Get It Twisted. Be right back.
Introducing a new cooking podcast. Now that's a mouthful. This weekly program explores the shared experience of cooking and the challenges of preparing new and different recipes. Discover something new, whether you're a raw beginner or a seasoned pro in the kitchen. New episodes of Now That's a Mouthful are available every Wednesday. Start listening today at nowthatsamouthful.org or on your favorite podcast app.
Hi, I'm attorney Steve Karp from the Chester County law firm of Karp & Hart. I tell people that my practice is exclusively limited to only personal injury and medical malpractice cases. While that's true, I also have a side job, and that is hosting Legal Talk, heard Tuesday afternoons on WCHE. On Legal Talk, we discuss any current legal topic or issue. I also answer your legal questions on the air. Do you have a question about your car insurance policy? Do you have enough coverage to fully protect you and your family if you're in an accident? Should you get full tort or limited tort coverage? What is underinsured motorist coverage? Do you need stacking? If you can't get to a phone Tuesday afternoons to ask me a question on the air, you can call me anytime at my office. Call me, Steve Karp, at 610-430-2200 or check out my website at karpandhartlaw.com. Have a legal question about personal injury or medical malpractice? Give me a call. 610-430-2200.
WCHE, Chester County's local news source that not only tells you what's happening, but is committed to telling you the behind-the-scenes reason why it's happening.
We're talking about family ties. We're talking about ties to legacy. And we're just talking about the history and finding the things, finding that base, finding that esteem so that we can get through these things that we come through as a people as a whole. Now, Angela, you brought up about 1900 and how that was important, and I wanted to get this engaged with the rest of the crew and with the roundtable, because there's two areas there when you talk about that. It's very dynamic, and I know John and Dr. Bay definitely want to chime in on this and all those. And when we talk about enslavement, when you talk about those two areas of enslavement, we talk about the Native American, and then also you're talking about the black because of slavery. And indentured servitude that happened in this country, and how that impacted, and where families were divided, and those things come up, those other parts, those hidden histories, as John was talking about even earlier, that's not there. And as you find these things, I guess as Angela said, these things, as you research, the things that are unveiled, I would like to bring that to the table, comments or thoughts from everybody and anybody on that area. Westchester Connection, let's start off with you up there.
Well, unfortunately, John had to leave us, but one of the things that I'd like to ask the Honorable Angela, this is what I said about fact. This is factual. We're not talking about a shopping list. We're talking about the facts, because the story is part of the fact. And we have courses on all kinds of stuff at the university level and at the K-12. How do you think that this can be incorporated? Because it would seem to me, as you said, the young man could sit up, and I certainly can relate to that, because knowing who I was and knowing who I came from and someone pulling out the history of who the Moors were and what they did, what they didn't do, and all of these things, there was no way that anybody who didn't have shoes when my people were doing these things could talk to me. could say anything that could move me or to make me, but so upset I might smack you because I have a temper. But you couldn't move me and make me ever feel less than you. It was a given in my mind that I could always outdo you and excel you. How can we now put these facts in perspective? Because again, you can't connect with that you don't understand. And once you have a lot of falsehood in your mind, you're going to have a lot of falsehood. So you're going to get a cake that's going to be flat because you don't understand that without the baking soda and the baking powder, it can't rise. So how do we incorporate this in the K, with K literally kindergarten, pre-K through 12, and how do we incorporate it in the post-secondary educational regime, I'll call it?
Good question.
Mm-hmm. That is an excellent question. I think in terms of I look at education, and I've worked in higher education as well, and I think about when I was an undergraduate and how things changed basically on the university campuses because students saw the need. When people were marching and sitting in administration buildings and saying, no, we demand that a different narrative be included, suddenly you started seeing the academic landscape change because it was asked. And I don't mean asked politely. Sometimes you had to sit in their space to make that demand heard and understood. And I think that sometimes it has to be spoken and demanded that it happen, but it has to happen on multiple places, not just in terms of what happens in elementary, secondary school, but particularly as I look at what happens on the university level, that will trickle down into what's going to happen on the secondary school level because suddenly the text has changed, the textbook has changed. And as we begin to tell our stories, also, we need to take responsibility of our own narrative as well. You know, impressions are made very, very early on in a child's mind. If a child does not see themselves reflected, one can infer, or that child can infer that, oh, I don't have a story. So we need writers to tell that narrative, but they don't need to make it up. Just learn from what you find in the records, and if your talent is art, will express that knowledge through art, express it through writing, express it through whatever your niche area is, and it becomes part of the common experience. It becomes part of the vernacular. It becomes part of the everyday experience. It shouldn't be something that you glean only at a family reunion. Okay, once a year we'll have the fish fry on Friday, have the picnic on Saturday, or the banquet Saturday night. It's beyond that, but it's something that you incorporate every day. And it's something that we make a part of our lives all the time. But at the same time, you know, look right now what's happening in higher ed. I live in the greater Baltimore, Washington area, and I don't think people realize what's happened. You've heard of the Georgetown 272 Project, people who were sold by Jesuit priests to Louisiana from Maryland so they could expand Georgetown University. This has not been a secret. It's been well known for years, certainly among people within the community. It was the young people, the students. The students went, what? Wait a minute. Hold it. What is going on here? It's because of the students themselves who demanded that the university respond to that. And now, if you've paid attention, a lot of other schools are saying, uh-oh, well, we don't want them to take over our building. Yes, we're going to acknowledge our legacy in slavery here at Columbia. Oh, yes, we're going to do the same thing here at Dartmouth, and we're going to do the same thing here at Princeton. And other places are saying, well, yes, because multiple institutions, our hallowed halls, became hallowed on the backs of the enslaved people who were sold, purchased, who labored there, who toiled there. But on the university level, it was the students that made Georgetown change. Now you've got them saying, oh, yes, we're going to give legacy status to applicants to Georgetown. But that should not be the end of it, because what if you don't want to go to Georgetown, but you're still from the same family that was enslaved, and your family's trajectory is totally changed anyway? So on multiple levels, voices need to be expressed. Young people have a tremendous amount of power on the universities, on the campuses, to say, hold it. this is part of your legacy. You've never even put this as part of your legacy. You never cared. But we now know about it, and we're not going to say we don't care. Certainly on that level, it's very, very important.
I'm sure Dr. Iowa has a question there, but on that level, I want to ask one question just from there. When you said that the students have the power, but the students have to be encouraged to do that. And that again, comes,
they have to become aware.
Have to become aware. And then, again, that comes back to home. That comes back to the family ties. That comes back to your base foundation. And that's where these days, the core, it's not there, the family core. Then that's where the esteem at home. And what do you call home? You know, this is why this is so important. This is why the history has to be told. Dr. Iowa.
Yeah, I just had a quick question for Dr. Walton Raji. All right, thank you. I've done some family history work myself, and I found the death certificates, birth certificates, of course, helpful. But I'm wondering, when you're looking for those people who are older, like beyond before 1940, before 1900, are there records for Native Americans and blacks that you would recommend, or what are the strategies you use then?
Wow, that's a whole workshop in itself. I teach workshops on that. Well, first of all, there are a lot of people who think that there aren't records, and Native people have been captured in the census pretty steadily since the 1870s. But again, I tell people, and this is a tremendous temptation that people have, oh, let me go and find my great-great-grandmother who is supposedly whatever ethnic group she may have been. But they do that before they have, you want to go step by step. You don't join, you don't participate in a marathon before you learn how to walk, and you don't walk before you learn how to crawl. So you've got to go step by step, doing those steps. So you've gotten back, let's say, to 1900. Well, you've got to understand, first of all, what was going on. Your family didn't live in a vacuum. They lived in a community. What is the community's history where they were living? Who were the Native people who were indigenous to that community? I hear people all the time saying, oh, my great-great-grandfather was from Blackfoot, and he was from Tennessee. Well, guess what? There are no Blackfoot Indians in Tennessee. Never have been. They've never left Browning, Montana. So it doesn't mean that you're not Native in ancestral ties, but it certainly wasn't a group of people who've never left Montana or Alberta, Canada, who's still there, in fact. So who were the people who were indigenous to be able to find it? You want to use sound methodology. Now, when you get to that 1900 census, there is one little problem that all genealogists have. There's that 20-year gap because the 1890 census burned. So you burned in 1923. So there's a lot that you don't have. So you've got to find someone who was at least 20 years of age who will be reflected in that 1880 census. Number one, try and find your ancestor in every census year that they lived. So if they lived between 1850 and 1920, you still have six or seven census years to find them. They will be there as long as you're asking the right questions. If that person, again, if the person died, let's say 1925, they were living in 1920, get them documented. Get them documented 10 years earlier. Also look at what was going on. What's the timeline historically? If they were living in 1920 and 1900, well, then they lived through a world war. Someone in that family particularly could have been drafted. Well, number one, everyone had to sign up for the draft if you were male. Even if you were not healthy, you still had to sign up and register. The 1910 census asks a critical question. Are you a veteran of the Civil War? Yes or no? Many people don't look at all those columns and see if they're checked or not. There are a lot. Every record leads you to another record. In one of our classes we taught at our institute in Fort Wayne, a man was a sitting judge, federal judge, and he came to our institute. Well, I've done this stuff for 20 years and blah, blah, blah. I am stuck on one line. And he said, well, here's the death certificate. And he pulled up a death certificate. We were able to find 19 additional record resources for that one death certificate.
And guess what?
Have you done this?
And we got to come on break here. This is Don't Get It Twisted, 610-701-WCHE 9243. And you know what? We'll be right back. And we're going to be bringing it home because, hey, we got to find those ties. Because there's ties to legacy even in your home. Don't Get It Twisted. We'll be right back.
Change is coming. If you're in the market for a compact tractor, here's what you need to know. For a limited time, your Yanmar tractor dealer has special offers that make owning a famously reliable Yanmar tractor easier than ever. The Northeastern USA has more Yanmar owners than any other region. That's because tractor owners here have come to know Yanmar as the quality choice for compact and utility four-wheel drive tractors with loaders, backhoes, tillers, and more. Yanmar's fuel efficiency, best-in-class diesel engines, and overall quality have helped Yanmar rise in the ranks as the tractor of choice. You've been looking to put more tractor power in your hands. You know it will help you take better care of your land. Now's the perfect time. Yanmar dealers are offering the best deals ever on all Yanmar tractors. Go to YanmarTractor.com to check out what your Yanmar dealer can offer you today. Extended payment schedules, low-rate financing, cash discounts, or even instant rebates worth thousands of dollars. Now's the time to test drive a compact tractor at your Yanmar tractor dealership. Locate a Yanmar dealer at YanmarTractor.com.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini services Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
Each month, Radio PA gives you a chance to send a question or comment to Governor Tom Wolf during our Ask the Governor program. Your input can make a difference, just like Thomas in Centre County, who was concerned about the state prison population counting toward the governor's proposed $25 per capita fee for state police coverage.
Prison populations included in these township formulas, is there a way to offset that, or is that just the way it's going
to be? I think Thomas makes a really good point. That's not right. So I will make sure that, at least in the proposal that I make, I will modify that we don't count the prison population in that. So I think Thomas makes a very good point. Thank you for that good question.
You can be a part of the next Ask the Governor program by going to PAMatters.com and clicking the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. You can also email the program directly at AskTheGov@PAMatters.com. That's AskTheGov, G-O-V, at PAMatters.com. Ask the Governor is an exclusive presentation of Radio Pennsylvania and PAMatters.com.
From Longwood Gardens to the Chester County Courthouse, from the Downingtown Loghouse to the Paoli Battlefield, from Lincoln University to Immaculata University, this is WCHE 1520 AM, the talk of Chester County.
All right. We are back. We're coming down on the home stretch here. You know something? This has been very informative. We've been talking about so much through the weeks, and we've been talking about action, and this is what it takes. It's, as I said way back in the room, we say we got to get rid of the crap. Complacency, resistance, apathy, and procrastination, and really get about to be doing. And it's going to take programs. It's going to take endeavors. It's going to take those with the willingness to invest the time to do as our guests and those that have been doing. Westchester, Dr. Bay, back online there. Hope we haven't lost you, have we?
Oh, no, I'm here.
It's great.
Giving out so much information. You know, I'm trying to catch up with everything. I did have a quick question for you, Dr. Angela. You know, because of the things that have happened, and this is something that I know of that has actually occurred in some relatives, where people from one area ended up leaving and left the ancestor, I mean, really basically from cross country, and ended up in another place. Sure. And it turned out was very difficult to find out where, but as you had said about the Blackfoot, and I talked to people of African ancestry, how everybody likes to say, well, you came from the west coast of Africa. Well, no, that's where you embarked from after you were kidnapped. but you had been from other areas in Africa because it was always a lot of movement. Are there ways to account for such things?
You mean in terms of African history before the Middle Passage?
Well, African history, but also here, the same idea that, you know, people ended up leaving.
Oh, yeah.
Like with my family, the reasons how we ended up being indigenous also was that was the way to our freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just, you know, as they say, jump on the first boat, you jump on the first boat leaving, and you get the hell up out of there.
Well, certainly the migration, whether we're talking about the 20th century Great Migration or the post period of enslavement, that was really probably the first in the context of history within this particular country. In context, there are stories of movement. One of the things that you can see movement in any, you can pull out a census record in 1920 and see everyone living in Philadelphia. But you'll see the elders in the household came out of North Carolina, and you realize, oh, okay, so mom and dad and grandma, they all left North Carolina on their own. This is voluntary migration. And you want to be able to certainly incorporate that, not just, you know, slap here the names, list the names, be happy. No, there's a migration that can be witnessed. You can find a migratory pattern on a death certificate when you see where that person was born. Well, wait a minute, hold on. Who is the informant? Oh, let me find that informant in the same census year. Ah, they're in a whole community that migrated in 1932. Oh, my goodness, there's a story here. What propelled them to all leave Forsyth County, Georgia, in the 1940s to end up in Pennsylvania in a colder climate, harsher climate, but a situation where other aspects of their lives would have been enhanced by that movement, and they had that choice. One of the things, of course, as a genealogist, it's very important to understand that we're dealing with documentable evidence, and we're dealing with a context of maybe 300 years, 300, I'm not saying, and I'm not ignoring something that happened 600 years ago, but I'm saying in terms of where our research is going to take us in terms of telling that narrative and telling all of those stories, as many as we can find along the way. There's that temptation to only tell the macro history. Oh, yes, well, you know, we came here. Yes, we were here before Columbus, and we did this. That's fine. Where are my folks that I can document? I may only go on my maternal side only to 1860. On my paternal side, I can go back farther than that. And it still, within the limitation of what I have found, I can still witness empowerment when I hear my young nephew, who's 11, saying that he's interested in looking into, do they ever allow children to be reenactors? He loves the history of the freedom fighters, and he wants to, he's 11, he wants to play, he wants to play act, he wants to be a freedom fighter. How many 11-year-olds do you know who say that? You know, they want to be Ninja Turtles or something, but very few want to participate in something that I've given them documented evidence. You know, you have 9 ancestors who wore this uniform, who fought for their own freedom and won it. And then afterwards, there was that movement and migration, and we can talk about that movement, talk about that migration, and talk about what they had to see along the way. Tremendous.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. There's a rich history beyond the history of people moving around, and that's what I'm talking
about.
We're always giving this idea that folks just stay put. Folks were just happy having watermelon and having a good time, and the First Nations, they were just had things shot at them, and they just all took it, and then they were gone. And that's just nonsense.
Yes.
Well, in fact, real quickly, part of my family history on my mother's side is that my mother's father was Lakota, and that he had walked from either North or South Lakota down to Kentucky. And certainly there are stories that we can follow and then start backtracking from there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, I think we all start with some kind of narrative somewhere.
Right.
And the question is, okay, is this something that can be truly documented, or did he possibly come from another indigenous community that might be a little bit closer to Kentucky? And what time period are we talking about? He would have had to have walked through multiple territories, multiple indigenous groups, many of whom would be hostile to Lakotas. And so one has to realize, well, wait a minute, is this really accurate? Maybe some of that story through time altered because maybe that indigenous population that was closer to Kentucky kind of got forgotten because it was never told or taught in Kentucky state history. Although earlier history reflects that here are some of the people who were there who were later oppressed, many of whom died from exposure to diseases that Europeans brought with them. But it's also important to understand, well, where exactly did that come from? And you start with that. Sometimes you can prove it, sometimes you can disprove it, but it's very, very important when you start out with maybe that as a backdrop to say, okay, let me see. What do the records say? Does the record say that reflects this particular ancestor or the parents of this particular line? Does this reflect they were born in Dakota Territory?
And Steve,
so that's, and if it is, you incorporate that and you put that evidence out there because it is documentable.
And this is where we are because guess what? Don't get it twisted. You got to move forward.
And thank you so much, Dr.
Yes.
Angela, for your presence and your knowledge and doing the work that you do.
Dr. Bay,
well, thank you.
I know
very
John had to leave there. And listen, don't forget to go to DGITwisted.com.
Thank you so much. You've been fabulous, Dr. Angela.
Yes. And we're going to have again. Don't forget, Family Ties and Legacy. You can go to .com. We'll have you going on there. And there's programs that are going to be coming up. So we'll be doing more things. So we're moving forward because we're going to build that foundation. We're going to build that esteem. We're going to move forward. And above all, because what are we going to tell everybody? Because in the end, we don't want to what?
Don't
get it twisted.